Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, this is David Roach from Junkyard, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal, and
anything else we feel like.
We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started. This is the Sean Baker Orchestra with Which Way to Radioland.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel. Welcome to another edition of Talking Metal. Before we get into the episode, I just wanted to mention David Roach from Junkyard is our guest, and please support the podcast. We have a Patreon account now where you can make a pledge. You can do $3 a month, $6 a month, whatever you want to do. Please check us out on Patreon. There's also, of course, the PayPal donation links and our Amazon links. You can use those and they take you right over to Amazon. You go about all your shopping as you normally would. There's no markup or anything like that. It's just one extra step, going to talkingmetal.com first and using our Amazon links. Also wanted to mention that every Friday we have new releases handpicked for you. So we tell you all the good music that's out every Friday. Just go to talkingmetal.com on Friday afternoon, Friday morning, whenever, and see what we're recommending you check out, because there's so much music. I know it's so hard to keep up with everything, and we kind of streamline it and tell you what new music is out currently that we think you might be interested in.
Nice.
My co-host, co-founder,
hey, John Astronomy here. How are you? Man?
Good. How you doing?
I am doing great. I am having a blast. I'm here drinking a new beer. I'm drinking Flying Horse Royal Lager Beer. It's a product of India.
Nice. I'm drinking a double IPA. It is Al Smith Brewing Company, the limited edition seasonal. Brewed in abundance of hops, 12 ounces, alcohol content 8.5, which I like. I like, you know, if it gets above 9, I don't like the taste of beer. I think that you're pushing it a little bit with that. Mm-hmm. It suddenly starts not tasting like beer. But I think if you can get between, you know, I think 6 is that what do they call it? Hot spot area, golden area. But I like pushing it up. But this one tastes quite good. It's definitely a little sharper because you have the more alcohol in it. But it's good. It's good. And what are you drinking again?
I'm drinking, it's called Flying Horse Royal.
Oh, yeah, I know them. Yeah.
Lager beer, and it's only 4.7%. Now, you know Chimay. What is the alcohol on Chimay? Do you know that beer?
I don't know.
It's like a Belgian beer. I tell you the truth, I drank a cup many years ago. I'm talking like 10 years ago. I drank a couple of Chimays over at this place called the Iron Monkey in Jersey City,
right?
Which you know about. And
yeah,
I was freaking flying high that night because of these two Chimays. It was crazy. I don't know what the deal was. And I've drank Chimay before, but for some reason, this was something that put me over the edge. I don't know. Anyway, I'm psyched to be back here on Talking Metal. Just recovering today from a Like It gig.
Cool. Like It is John's band. If you guys don't know Like It, they are a great band. What's the website, John?
Thank you. The website is like-it-online.com. And you can find us on Facebook if you look up Like It Band, I believe. So do that, and definitely follow us. Follow the band Like It on Facebook if you can. That would be great. It would really help us out a lot. And if you're in the New York, in tri-state area,
right,
come and see a show. We have a gig on December 10th. At the Space Asbury, New York, with Winger.
Cool.
That's going to be a good gig.
Cool. Let's come back and talk about
Let me double check that that's true.
Yeah. Well, you check that out. In the meantime, we are going to get into an interview with David Roach from Junkyard. Right now, let's hit some new Junkyard going into the interview. This one is called Cut from the Same Cloth. There's a video out for this. We'll have it linked through today's show notes. Great stuff. Junkyard have a new record out. Be sure to check it out. It's called High Water. Again, this is called Cut from the Same Cloth off the High Water album by Junkyard, followed by my interview with David Roach.
Forgive me for the things I said and did. I thought I knew everything. Just a drunken, stupid kid. I never learned a thing. Guess I found out the hard way. That ain't what it's all about. Yeah, I learned some hard lessons, man. About that there ain't no doubt.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel of the Talking Metal Podcast, and it's a real honor because I've been a fan of this band for a very long time. On the line, calling in David Roach from Junkyard. David, how are you?
I'm well, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you bet. I remember discovering you guys way back in 1989 when I saw Axl Rose wearing a Junkyard t-shirt, and that was kind of the beginning of my journey, and it took me all the way back to April of this year when I saw you guys just play an awesome, awesome set at M3 in Maryland.
Oh,
just so good, and the crowd was so responsive. You guys were on fire, and it just really was so refreshing to see you guys up there and just doing your thing after all these years and sounding still so great. And there's a new record out, so I guess let's start there. The record came out probably right around the time you were playing M3, so earlier this year. It is High Water, and the song we just heard coming into the interview is called Cut from the Same Cloth. Why was 2017 the year for Junkyard to deliver us a full-length new record?
Because it was supposed to be 2015 and it didn't happen.
Good answer.
It's a little late.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the music industry. You know, it's like trying to get a dinosaur to move over a couple inches. You know, every, 3 months means 6 months. 6 months means a year. So, you know, you got to kind of take the time line, you know, with a grain of salt. It took longer than we thought. And it's kind of the nature of the beast. The music business never goes as scheduled, or that's been my experience at least. So we sort of had an offer that wasn't concrete in 2015. So we'd been writing songs to record for that project, and then it fell through. So then we kept on plugging away, writing songs and playing. And that's when we hooked up with Rick from Acetate and really got the ball rolling for this record.
Cool. And I know there's a music video out for Cut from the Same Cloth, which is just a great song off the High Water record, the new record from Junkyard. Yep. We'll have that link through today's show notes on talkingmetal.com. And how do you approach a record nowadays as compared to like back in the day when you guys were signed to Geffen and there was a lot of money? I mean, it's got to be a very different thing creating it, or maybe it's not. I don't know.
If you know, let me know, because I have no freaking idea. I mean, it's such a completely different world now. The way, you know, people get exposure. I mean, it used to be contingent upon the record label to get you out there, get in the mainstream press, and you know, get all this
marketing,
get the machine rolling.
Yeah.
Now the, you know, it's a lot of, for my personal experience, our personal experience was a lot of do it yourself, you know, doing our own videos, and kind of trying to feel our way into what the music business is about these days.
Right.
Which I'm still, you know, like in, this is the classic story. Your first record's easy to write because you had your whole life to write it.
Yeah.
The second one can be a little tricky, and that happened to be the case here. I mean, it was I'm proud of it. It's a solid second effort, but you know, we definitely had some sophomore growing pains. And this third album, we had another lifetime to write. I mean, 26 years. I mean, I only had 21 years to write the first record. So, it was really cool though, because we were just doing it at our own pace, doing what we wanted to. We didn't have a record label saying, well, I think you should try this direction or go for this kind of look, or, you know, I want something that sounds like that. You know, it was just us doing what we do, you know, like it or lump it.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, that took all the pressure off of it. So it was enjoyable.
And you know, the new record, when you talk about those first, the first two records way back in the day, the new record still has a sound that to me at least fits in. You know, it's not exactly the same, things are a little different, but it's still kind of in that same style and still has that Junkyard sound. Is that something that when you're writing the record and recording the record that you have to keep in mind? Well, we need to do a Junkyard.
Okay. I think, you know, I mean, you know, we've had we've been told that, you know, there's Southern influences, punk influences, you know, R&B, you know, all these different influences. And that's true. That's how Junkyard is. So, but I think no matter what the influence of a song is, by the time we get done with it, it sounds like a Junkyard song, whether it's kind of a country ballad or just a straight ahead rocker. It's still, you know, sounds like a Junkyard song to me.
Right.
Having 26 years between the second and third record, you know, we didn't have years and years of trying to reinvent ourselves or innovate or bring in, you know, try concept albums or anything. You know, it was kind of picking up where we left off and, you know, why mess with the formula? Three chords and, you know, start strong and see at the finish line.
Right. Right on. Cool. And again, the new record, guys, is called High Water by Junkyard. It's, if you were into the classic Junkyard stuff back in the day, you definitely need to pick up the new record. It's on Spotify, it's on iTunes, it's on Amazon. It's just about everywhere. So definitely do yourself a favor and check out High Water by Junkyard. We are talking with David Roach, the vocalist of Junkyard. And I, you know, I mentioned M3 earlier. That was, again, just such a great set you guys played in the afternoon. It was quite hot out. Mm-hmm. A great crowd response. That's got to make you happy after so many years to see such a great turnout and just a crowd still just so excited to hear you play your music.
M3 was fantastic. I couldn't have asked for more. I mean, we had some people who saw us 30 years ago, 25 years ago. A lot of people have been waiting 25 years to see us, and a lot of people that weren't even born.
Yeah, right. Yet.
So we got, you know, it's just a great opportunity playing with that many in front of that many people, because you get to expose yourself to a bunch of people who know, you know, who the hell are these guys? To the diehard fans that have been waiting decades to see us live. So, it's a great experience.
Very cool. And, you know, when I actually remember talking to you a little bit after the M3 set at the bar there that evening, and Lon Friend was there. I know he was a pretty big supporter of you guys back in the early days. Am I correct with that statement?
Yeah, Lon Friend was a good friend back then, yeah. He had, you know, he was the editor of RIT magazine, which I thought was one of the better rock magazines at the time. And, yeah, he's a good guy, big supporter of the band, yeah.
Another supporter, I don't know, like, how well you knew this guy, but honestly, this is the way I discovered you. He was wearing your T-shirt, Axl Rose.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
You can't buy better publicity than that, can you?
No.
What happened was we were, again, you know, even back then we were kind of doing it yourself on a budget. Guitar player Chris had some screening experience, you know, T-shirt screening. So he made the artwork and shot the screen, and we just printed the T-shirts in our living room, and just for promotion. We weren't even selling them at that point. And we had a gig that night, and I don't remember who was there. I think Duff and Axel, obviously, Slash. I don't know if it was all the guys or most of them, but anyway, they were in there, and we were giving out shirts. So, and Axel came up and did a Rose tattoo cover with us, and it was cool. And yeah, the next day, I guess he had a photo shoot, and he wore it live once or twice, and, you know, Junkyard all over the place.
Right.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bailey.
Absolutely. And that night that I was talking to you after...
To answer the question, so
go ahead.
We weren't really friends per se, you know, we knew of each other, you know, it's kind of, hey, how you doing? Colleagues, you know, business colleagues more than, you know, we didn't go bowling on Sunday nights or anything, but, you know.
So you guys, back in those days, you signed to Geffen Records, which at that time was just a massive label, of course, you know, Guns and just hundreds of other superstars signed to Geffen. How much pressure was there going into the studio to record that first record? You had Tom Werman in the studio with you producing. Memories of going into the studio, the pressure, how was it working with Tom?
The first record, there was no pressure. I mean, I was either too young, too naive, or too drunk to care. You know, I didn't really feel pressure.
Right.
You know, we were brimming with confidence and, you know, we were running on all cylinders, and Todd Borman was the consummate pro, you know, very easygoing guy, very easy to work with. And, you know, it was just a very relaxed atmosphere. There was no pressure at all for that first record.
And how about the second record? You did two records for Geffen, sixes, sevens, and nines, which, you know, you kind of had a minor hit off of that record with All the Time in the World. I don't think it was quite as big as Hollywood, but it's still a real decent record, in my opinion. Was you mentioned that you had all the, you know, so many years to prepare for that first record. Were you guys out of songs by the time you were going into the studio for the second record, and was the songwriting process...
No, you know, we had maybe close to half a dozen songs, and maybe four or five of them made it on the second record that time around. And then a few of them were the songs that we wrote, you know, new songs we wrote. But again, I didn't feel a great deal of pressure. What I did notice in the second album was the label pressuring us to kind of clean up our image or something, you know.
Really?
It's kind of like, you know, they when they sign you, they go, "You guys are awesome. You're not like anybody else. You know, this is gonna be great." And then once you get signed, they want to turn you into everybody else. So like that song, All the Time in the World. You know, it's a decent song. I don't you know, hate the song, but it just, I get like PTSD thinking about it, because I remember the video shoot and we're wearing like custom made clothes, and right, I'm prancing around like a Nancy, you know, and I remember thinking in the back of my mind, even while we were doing it, I'm like, this isn't us, this isn't me, this isn't cool, man. And I felt like, you know, we were kind of selling our souls to the devil right then, you know.
Yeah. And what happened then? Was it just, you know, I know the tides were kind of turning with what was popular and stuff at that time. We're talking about, like, I guess, like 1992. Were you first dropped from Geffen before you broke up, or did you break up prior to leaving Geffen?
It was sort of all the same time. I mean, everybody got dropped. I mean, it was everybody at Geffen, everybody at every label across the board as far of music in that genre. Right. And it was a little bit of the, you know, throwing out the babies with the bathwater to an extent, because there were some decent bands. And I think we had a lot more in common because of our punk rock background.
Yeah.
We had a lot more in common with the alternative scene.
Yeah, I know. I totally agree.
As far as the way we approach music, than the hair and glam, you know, lipstick and makeup, right, you know, whatever, big hair scene. So, you know, that was kind of unfortunate. But, you know, at that point in time, the industry kind of needed to get blown up and start over again. Because, I mean, when Guns N' Roses took off like the way they did, everybody was scrambling around to find the next Guns N' Roses. So, you know, 100 bands got signed within a couple of months, and, you know, maybe 2 or 3% of them were worth a damn.
Right.
And I think the same thing kind of happened with the grunge movement. You know, everybody was looking to find the next Nirvana, the next Stone Temple Pilots, the next Pearl Jam. And what you get is 100, you know, kind of watered down versions, or, you know, weak impersonations of, you know, of those bands.
Absolutely. And, you know, one song that's just become such an iconic classic, of course, is the song Hollywood off the first record. You know, and that song really seems to kind of capture a moment in time of in the late 80s, that kind of Hollywood scene that was going on, for better or for worse. Any memories? I'm just talking general memories of what that scene was like for you personally. Were you disgusted by it? Did you embrace it? Was it a little of both? How did you feel about what was going on?
I can't speak how many people have actually seen Hollywood, or what people's conceived notions of Hollywood are.
Right.
But when I moved there, it was a jungle, and it was a ghetto. I mean, Hollywood Boulevard was ghetto. It was crack dealers everywhere, and just it was gnarly.
Yeah.
But it was fun. I mean, and I was young. I didn't care, the plight and the crime and all that didn't bother me. Over the years, though, they've cleaned it up quite a bit, And Disney and the Scientologists came in and kind of remade the whole place. But it was sleazy. It was dangerous. It was, it was real. But there was something happening. I mean, there was magic in the air back then. I mean, there was something going on every single night of the week. I mean, Sunday night, Friday night, it didn't make any difference. There was always a good show. And there was always a party at somebody's house afterwards. I mean, if you wanted to do something, there was always something to do.
Right.
24/7. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was like, for me as a 20-year-old kid moving from Texas into Hollywood, it was like, a 6-year-old going to Disneyland for the first time. I mean, it had everything I wanted.
Yeah.
Sleazy women, drinks, partying all night,
Yep.
I had the e-ticket, man. It was fun.
Nice. So what's up next for Junkyard? You have this great record that is fairly new. Wow. Came out earlier this year, High Water. I know you've been staying busy with stuff since I saw you in M3 back in late April, but looking ahead, what do we have coming up for Junkyard?
Well, we have been sort of busy, and the album's been out 6 months now, and I'd like to be out playing every night. I've been sitting at home for the last 4 weeks twiddling my thumbs. We had that a festival in Florida that got Irma or
right.
Jose or somebody, that got canceled. So we don't really, and we just changed booking agents. So we're going to start getting busy in November and December again. And then hopefully 2018 we'll be, trying to get some of these pockets and corners of America that have been waiting to see us and, getting over to Europe and hitting some festivals there and anything. I'll play anywhere, anytime. I don't care. I just, I figure I got a few more years to flog this horse, so I'm gonna milk it till it's till I can't get up and do it the way I want to do it anymore.
Yeah, well, please do. We'd love to see you in the New York City or New Jersey area where I live up here. I know there's a lot of fans, and it would be great if we could get you up in this area. We'd love to see Junkyard in the Northeast.
Definitely.
Cool, David. Thanks.
Yeah, like I said, we're gonna find as many places as we can.
Awesome.
I mean, what's feasible for us, is doing like weekend getaways where we, play maybe Thursday, Friday, Saturday night
right.
in certain regions, like go to Texas and do a San Antonio, Houston thing, and then go to like Phoenix, San Diego, that thing.
Right.
I know we're doing like Portland and Seattle at the end of December, for us, it doesn't make sense to be out on the road, for a 3-4-5 week tour, because there's too many like Tuesday, Wednesday nights where you're playing for 30 people and then you gotta, pay for a hotel room and all, the expenses outweigh the, what you're bringing in.
Sure.
So you actually do better just playing the Friday, Saturday nights on the weekends.
It makes sense. I mean, at the end of the day, it's all about
my day job at Taco Bell, and everybody's good.
right on. Cool. I'd love to see at M3 again this year. I don't know if there's been any talk about that, but that would be great to get you back there, because
I haven't heard any confirmation, but I mean, I think they were really happy with us last time, and I know we were happy, so I would hope that we're returning.
Yeah, I'd love to see you there. Cool. Well, David, thanks so much for chatting with us on Talking Metal. We're going to hit a Junkyard classic here to take us out, and we heard some of the new material earlier, and we'll have, again, in the show notes on talkingmetal.com, all the links up to the website, the video, where you can buy the album. Again, it's called High Water, and it is the 2017 release by Junkyard. We've been talking with David Roach, the vocalist frontman of Junkyard. Thanks, David.
Hey, Mark, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you, and hope to see everybody out there soon.
See the boy on the clock.
was the classic song Hollywood by Junkyard. A big thanks to David Roach from Junkyard for joining us here on Talking Metal. So, John, we'll get into some more Junkyard in just a bit, but you played a gig recently. Now, this was, you opened for Bret Michaels, right?
Right.
How did that go? I missed that one.
We played a gig with Bret at Mulcahy's in Long Island, Wantagh, New York. That's where Jones Beach Theater is. And we had a blast at the gig. What was really cool is I was at the venue early, like bringing in my gear, and Pete Evick and the band were on stage, and they did Cold Gin during the sound check, and I thought that was cool. And one of the other coolest things about that is Eric Brittingham from Cinderella was playing bass, which was really, really cool. So that was a blast. And now the
Pete Evick, of course, if you don't know, guys, is Brett's guitar player when he's not doing Poison.
Yeah,
also like his manager or something, like at least.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, wow, like, that's cool.
That might not be right. He's possibly like the tour manager, or like he's definitely like helps Brett organize stuff. I'm not exactly
kind of almost like how I help Ace. Probably similar.
Probably
thing.
Similar. And I know he's very, very close with Brett.
Yeah. And so we had a blast at that gig, and then that led to us doing this gig coming up with Winger on December 10th at the Space at Westbury Theater, also in Long Island, and that's going to be really cool. I'm looking at their website. They got a lot of cool stuff going on. Chris Robinson Brotherhood is playing. Looks like there's a great tribute night with Alive 75, a tribute to Kiss, and Judas Priestess.
Right.
And, we remember Judas Priestess.
Oh, of course,
they were on our show.
Cool. Well, Winger, we saw last year at M3, along with Junkyard, David Roach, our guest on today's episode. M3, such a great event. We have an announcement, hopefully, coming soon to Talking Metal as far as the next 10-year anniversary, the next M3 goes. Stay tuned to that. I'm hopeful that we'll have Eric Baker, the producer, on to reveal some maybe possibly even exclusive information about this year's M3. A guy on Facebook had done some detective work and noticed that the new LA Guns t-shirt that they're selling at their gigs lists the last show in Columbia, Maryland on May 5th. So I think we can assume that LA Guns will be on M3 this year. But we don't know of anyone else. That's just some detective work done by a talking
Metal. Yeah, boy, that's good. Hey,
on Facebook.
Good for you to the guy who found that out. Very, very cool.
Name. I should remember his
very,
name.
Very cool that you figured that out. And
I got a postcard in the mail too, John. It came to my house. It's the coolest postcard I've ever seen. It's the Scorpions Animal Magnetism. It's like the album. It's like the cassette cover.
Wow.
It's the fold out and everything. It's the cassette cover of Scorpions Animal Magnetism. Somehow it arrived at my house, which is awesome. Old school mail. You got to love it.
Yeah.
Let's listen to a track off of that record. This is Make It Real. They played this in the set list when I saw them at Madison Square Garden about a month ago. Again, this is Make It Real by the Scorpions off of Animal Magnetism, and then we'll come back and I'll read the Animal Magnetism postcard I received in the mail. Make It Real by the Scorps.
Nice.
You analyze it. a secret yearning. Don't you know it could come true? Now's the time to send wheels turning. Open up your life for you.
Scorpions, Make It Real, here on Talking Metal. So, again, this was like a postcard, John. It came in.
That's so cool. Now, yeah. Did the label or somebody send it to you?
No, just a Talking Metal fan.
Wow.
I don't even know how he got my address, but he got it, and it says, "Greetings, Mark. Longtime listener. Met Astronomy in Denver last year at A Show.
Nice.
I appreciate what you both do, so maybe this is an old-fashioned thank you postcard. Played this cassette so damn much it disintegrated. Now the insert is a postcard. If ever in Denver, let me know. I'd love to have a beer. All the 1980s rockers, Quiet Riot, Piercy, LA Guns, Autograph are stopping in Denver for shows. It's always fun. Respectfully, Philip." And then he gives his address, web address, remember it. .org, which I need to check out that website. Cool,
nice, Philip.
That's great. Yeah, I loved getting this, Philip, and I appreciate it. It's I just stuck it on my wall up above my desk here. So
that sounds
awesome.
So cool.
Yeah, awesome. Phillip. And I'm glad you remember him at the A Show.
Yeah,
Did you really?
I always have a blast in Denver. And Philip, it was great running into you. And I always love when I run into Talking Metal listeners. If you're at an A Show, and even if you see me, without a doubt, come up and say hello. If you don't see me, ask for me, because if it's a USA show, 99.9% chance I will be there. There's occasionally one I will miss. But 99.9% of the time I will be there. So you can ask for me, you know, at the backstage door or something like that.
Well, let's wrap it up with some more classic Junkyard here on Talking Metal. We appreciate your support. Please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and listen to this song, Junkyard, with us here on Talking Metal. This is All the Time in the World.
Something about it. Something's not quite.